everyone. Welcome to The Period Party. I'm Nicole.
Hi, guys. I'm Matt.
And on this episode, we're discussing women's health and the female athlete with Jessica Drummond, the founder and CEO of the Integrative Women's Health Institute. She is passionate about caring for and empowering women who struggle with women's and pelvic health conditions. And she's equally passionate about educating and supporting clinicians in confidently and safely using integrative tools to transform women's and pelvic health care. Welcome to the show, Jess.
Thank you. It's so much fun to be on the period party.
It is always so much fun. So much fun to be
I know. Here. We're not going to disappoint.
We know. And we're very happy to have you on here today. But let's jump straight into it and talk about female athletes and periods, because I know for many of my patients, this is a topic that I feel isn't really discussed enough, and so many come into my clinic and don't realize that it's a thing. What do you say to the fact that athletic women should consider maybe being on birth control so that their periods are not disrupted by their performance? Let's start with that.
Well, you know, I think when it comes to female athletes and menstrual health, the best thing to do is start as young as possible. You know, I have a 12-year-old daughter, 13 actually. She turned 13 Friday. I have a teenager now. And
that's big.
I know. But, you know, many of her friends, she is somewhat athletic, but she is, there are a lot of her friends who are very athletic, and you kind of don't realize now that girls play sports in elementary school very much on par with boys. But it's middle school where things start to change. You know, girls get their periods, and there's difficulty with sort of integrating period health with being a soccer player or a volleyball player or a gymnast or whatever. And so, you know, because with puberty, girls' bodies grow and change and they get more fat and they get taller really quickly. And, you know, that really affects their athletic performance. And I think what we need to start paying attention to as parents and coaches and clinicians is that as girls are entering puberty, when they are still really active, you know, on par with the boys, starting to educate the parents and the girls about menstrual health in a way that's very empowering, because most of the time what happens is it's, you know, it's still quite secretive and embarrassing, and it's always like, oh, you're going to get your period, so you'll probably be you won't be able to play, you'll be too tired, you're going to have cramps. Like it normalizes this sort of negative impression that women have been carrying around about their menstrual health for, you know, centuries. And it makes it difficult for girls to continue to play. You know, what if a game is day one of their cycle and they're kind of expecting to be just down and out with pain and fatigue and headaches? And, you know, so this, it's a bit of a self perpetuating process. And so what women are kind of offered is either like, you're in pain, you can't keep working out, you're not going to do well in the events, you're growing, you know, it's like all of this disaster is happening at the same time, or we can just numb it all. You know, we'll just put you on birth control when you're 15 years old and shut your period off, and then it won't bother your performance.
Would you say this is the same? I mean, this is the same for athlete or for young women who are teenagers who aren't athletes as well, right? I mean, this is where they get it from, yeah?
Sure, I mean, yes. Mm-hmm.
And so many reasons, though. Like, I've had ridiculous people come to me and say, oh, I'm just going to put her on the pill because she's going on school camp and we don't want to get her a period while she's on school camp.
Right,
or,
right.
You know, it's her DIB, which is like a prom. We don't want to risk that being a factor. And you're so right, Jess, like we've got to educate parents on this as well as young women, because it's not a solution that's viable.
It's really not, because, you know, there are a number of studies that have just started to come out in alignment with actually a male birth control study that was fascinatingly looking at, they actually stopped the study. There was a study of male birth control that they stopped because the men had side effects such as changes in libido and depression.
Oh, maybe. I'm sitting here like biting my tongue. I'm trying to be appropriate.
I just think it's fabulous that this study was, I just love all this stuff that's coming to light at the moment because it's like, you know, once again, we've been banging that little drum over here and no one's really been listening. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, right. Yeah. That is a thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, essentially this study was stopped because the men, the subjects who were all men, couldn't tolerate the side effects and weren't, you know, the researchers were not going to ethically ask them to tolerate these side effects. And yet, you know, just maybe 3 months ago, a big paper came out talking about how depression is a significant side effect of female birth control. And so, and we know, I mean, this paper came out probably 8-10 years ago that birth control increases pain with orgasm. We have actually some really specific things about vulvodynia and certain genetic SNPs and being on birth control pills. So, you know, I think when we're cavalier about putting women on birth control pill, whether it's for their, the sake of not having their period during their soccer tournament or not having it during the prom or their deb, you know, we're forgetting that this is actually changing the hormonal environment of this girl/woman's physiology. And so instead, I think we have a third option that, generally speaking, has not yet been well explored. I mean, clearly you guys have explored it and we have this small drum of, I don't know, 15 of us kind of somewhere in the world, like trying to talk about it. But, you know, we have to, I think athletic girls are a great population to start with in terms of teaching them about the benefits of their menstrual cycles, because, you know, I didn't really understand the emotional shifts, the physical shifts, the mental health shifts that naturally happen in a relatively subtle way through the menstrual cycle. As you know, for example, like during the late follicular phase, when estrogen levels are relatively high and testosterone levels are the highest that women are going to experience during that month, and then in the luteal phase, when you have relative, you know, quite high progesterone levels, modestly high estrogen levels, that if you're paying attention, there are physiologic and even athletic benefits that can come from being aware of where you are in the cycle. So for example, what I teach my clinicians is that in our programs is that, for example, when you're in that late follicular phase and estrogen and testosterone are highest, there is reasonably good data that shows that you're going to be most productive. Also, you know, there's lots of other benefits that aren't exactly sports related, but most sexually attractive, your highest libido, which I use a lot for my perimenopausal women who are having trouble with libido and just starting to tune back into that. But when you're talking about athletic performance, you know, you have the most energy. You know, we could teach this to entrepreneurs, we could teach this to women CEOs, we could teach this to women leaders, that there are times in our menstrual cycles that are, it's much easier to be quite sort of productive in a masculine sort of way. Whereas there are other times in our cycles where we are more intuitively aware and focused. It will be easier to connect better with other women. And that generally tends to be in the early to mid luteal phase. And there are built-in times where, you know, giving ourselves permission for relative rest, plateauing our training so that there's a recovery period, which would be, again, kind of late luteal phase, very early follicular phase when bleeding. Because in fitness training research, there's always like a time where you want to be making strength and endurance and speed kinds of gains. Then there are times when you want to be plateauing and maintaining those gains. And there are times when you want to be rest and recovering. And when you skip any of those phases, you actually can't continue to continuously make gains. You know, we're not machines. So if you don't allow for that recovery and allow for the kind of to solidify the gains, then they aren't unable to maintain, because the person will either burn out or they'll end up getting injured or excessively fatigued. And so we kind of have all of that built into our natural feminine rhythm. And so if we can learn to work with it, I really believe it's a secret to performance enhancement. Now, the only time it can be problematic is, you know, let's say you're going to the Olympics and you're in early follicular phase on the day of your competition, which interestingly happened to a Chinese athlete this year. And she kind of mentioned it. She was like, oh, you know, we got fourth, but I was on my period. She was like doing this after interview. And I was like, oh, you know, I wish I had known her 3 months ago, because again, to me, if you're aware that this is going to happen and you're well-trained, you can, what I call, scaffold the experience by making sure that you're doing nothing that day but prepare for that race. So if you're, you know, and it doesn't have to be the Olympics. I mean, you know, you could be doing a local 5K. It could be a girl's opportunity to show a collegiate scout, you know, how good she is on the soccer field. If there's a high importance on that day's performance, you can make sure that you're really well fed, that you maybe are taking some additional fish oil or anti-inflammatory supplements, that you're, you know, you've gotten extra rest, that you've got maybe a massage therapist right there with you, that no, you don't have to take care of your kid, that somebody else is doing that, you know, that you've kind of set everything up to where your attention can be on the event only, knowing that, you know, you're, if it was up to nature, this would be a rest day.
I love that. I know. Oh my gosh, I'm feeling that for everything. Like, just not about, you know,
just athletes, but for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's genius.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, like girls, you know, trying to, you know, give a presentation at school, or there are certain times you actually do get to sort of pick when you're going to be, you know, doing some high pressure, high productive kinds of things. And if you know how this is most effectively built into your cycle, you can really work with it.
No kidding. I mean, this, of course, like we were just saying, right, applies to all girls and women, but it seems like it's much more nuanced for girls who are, especially girls who are involved in athletics or sports of some kind.
Yes, I think, well, and I think they're more tuned into their bodies, you know, there's a real impact on them as things start to change in puberty in terms of, you know, growing and their strength ability changing and their endurance changing and their speed work changing, you know, it depends on what sport they're in, but they're more acutely aware of the physical changes when they're, you know, when they have an identity of themselves as an athlete.
Right. And I know you just described a number of different ways for women to start paying attention. Are there any others in terms of like how we can educate them and of course their parents and coaches about the menstrual health side of things, its relationship to their overall health?
Well, I think there's a couple ways we can, so in terms of paying attention, I think when you're talking about a younger population of athletes, you know, teens and middle school, high school, college, you know, using tracking apps, you know, just starting to get them aware of their cycle. I mean, I don't think anyone ever like taught me anything about my cycle, really, you know,
later. I mean, oh my goodness, never. I joke about this all the time. All I got taught is that, well, pretty much you can't have sex because you'll fall pregnant.
Right.
Yes.
That you got a period every month. I did not get taught anything else. I think that there was a bit of a discussion about an egg at some point, but they kind of put that under the carpet because heaven forbid you actually understood.
Right.
There wasn't many days you could fall pregnant because then you might go out and cause a bit
right.
of
trouble.
I got a book and I went to Catholic high school.
I got a book.
We didn't even have sex education. We had like Christian family life education. I mean,
I love that it was called that actually.
There's nothing, there are no other words. High school,
but. Yeah. Jeepers. Like, you know, there's so much. I mean, I wonder what it's like now. I think, I know I've gone into schools before, especially Catholic schools, and they've been like, now we just need to talk about how you're going to talk about this. And you're like, really?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of the facts.
There's a way you talk about this. I don't know, Jess. What's it like here? I don't even know anymore in the US.
It's essentially, it's very minimal.
It is still non-existent. Yeah.
I mean, it exists. Like Claire certainly had, you know, like a little bit of sex ed in school. To be honest, she had in fourth grade, she had some sex ed in her Catholic school. And wow, it was pretty good because one of the graduates of that school is a gynecologist and she came back. Her mother is like the religion teacher. It was taught by the religion teacher and a gynecologist.
So wrong.
But it was moderately helpful. And then beyond that, it was just, yeah, the basics. But no one really like, so it's, but I think this is an important distinction. It's sex education. It's not menstrual health education.
Very true.
And so
that is true.
You know, girls are really not taught about the psychosocial impacts of estrogen shifts. They're not taught about energetic, you know, and pain related, you know, shifts that occur, even libido shifts, you know, I mean, there's normal libido shifts. And so I think that's really more what I'm talking about, that I think we have this opportunity to show them that it's that your menstrual cycle is not just the 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever bleeding days. It's the whole flow of your hormones that, you know, go up and go down, and there's more than one, and they interact with your brain neurotransmitters and, you know, your joints and everything. You know, I mean, there are 300 plus estrogen receptors in the body. So I think as these changes occur, to, you know, kind of explain to girls that there is a monthly complete cycle in the month. And interestingly enough, there's a complete cycle for men too. It's just that their hormonal cycles are less complex because it's essentially entirely testosterone driven, but they're daily. And so they kind of align with the workday, whereas women's cycles are monthly. So not, they certainly don't align with the workday. And so I think as girls and women and even boys to a lesser degree, that there's less adjustment on them, but it's useful, just like we kind of, and again, we've really gotten away from this because we have lights and screens pretty much 24/7, but circadian rhythms, menstrual rhythms, these are very important to our overall health, to our HPA axis and that sort of thing.
Oh, no doubt.
Can I ask a question? Because we're talking about young women who are athletic getting a period and how they can utilize their cycle, basically. But what about young athletic women who aren't getting a period? Because that's a very real issue as well. There's a lot of, you know, that can be one reason why they're not menstruating. What do you suggest in these instances?
Right. So I think the other side of the coin is how we can use menstrual health to really inform red flags about a girl's general health. So number one, athletic girls who have not gotten their period by the time they're 15, 16 years old, that's a big red flag. If they've gotten their periods, but then they lose them or they never really regulate, that's a big red flag. And so we used to look for what was called the female athlete triad, which is a combination of having menstrual irregularities. So that means either you have irregular cycles or really light, short cycles or no cycle at all. Plus, a lot of times it would be first identified because the girl would have a stress fracture or some other kind of fracture injury. And so you're starting to look at bone weaknesses in teenagers, which is a huge problem because teenagers are when that's the time in life when you've got to build the bone that you're going to have for the rest of your life. So menstrual health, bone health, and eating disorder. So, you know, they might be, and again, it doesn't have to be a frank bulimia or anorexia. It can be an orthorexia. It can be just kind of dieting obsessively, things like that. Or binging, you know, the clinical eating disorder. But now a new paper came out, it was just within the last 2 years, talking about how, you know, it's the female athlete triad is a very limited description of what's really going on. And it comes from a couple of different things. One, the HPA axis that I was just mentioning, but also cardiovascular health, mental health. So if girls are not regularly cycling, they're not getting adequate estrogen when they are really needing it most for their bone health, for cardiovascular protection, for mental health. You know, with low estrogen, you have depression risks and anxiety risks. You have HPA axis dysfunction risks, which give them things like less resilience to stress, which this is a critical time. It could end up making them less resilient to stress for the rest of their lives. Certainly we want to be monitoring menstrual health on a regular basis rather than waiting till a girl has a stress fracture or is struggling with depression.
That's so, I mean, just listening to you say that is so important.
It is.
Yeah, and because they call it now Red S, which is relative energy deficiency in sports. So, you know, and what's interesting is when you look at the data on even elite collegiate athletes, essentially none of them are getting even adequate calories, never mind nutrients. So, you know, we do have an obesity challenge in this country, but for a subset of athletic girls, the bigger problem is actually being underweight, having these very kind of under the radar subclinical eating disorders where they're just not fueling themselves as athletes. They're worried about, especially in sports like cross country running or gymnastics or ice skating or dance, where, you know, there's a leanness and body image issues going on. And those kinds of, you know, eating disorders and sub eating clinical eating disorder and what's now called Red S instead of female athlete triad, these are huge problems because there's a really significant mortality rate associated with these. So while obesity is a huge problem and there ends up being, you know, mortality later in life from heart disease and cancer and strokes and things like that, diabetes, when young girls have menstrual irregularities, we need to catch those early because anorexia has a really significant mortality rate for quite young women.
Oh, no doubt. So what about perimenopausal athletes whose periods may be becoming naturally more irregular? Like what red flags can they look for to be sure that they're avoiding this relative energy deficiency in sport?
Well, you know, for perimenopausal athletes, again, what's interesting is a lot of them have never been taught this information. And so they may be finding that when they were once able to run, now it's like they're not interested in running or, you know, a lot of us can get away with a bunch of things in our 20s, even early 30s. You know, it's like, they're eating kind of crap, and they're not sleeping enough and they're working too much, but they're exercising and it's kind of their stress reliever and they have fun with it and they feel good. But then they start getting into their 40s and what I see, you know, they don't have like the Frank Red S again, unless they're more high level athletes, but if they're kind of the weekend warriors that were sort of balancing their lives with exercise being utilized either for just stress relief or to kind of control their weight, they're finding that it's not working anymore. They don't enjoy exercise as much. They're essentially getting symptoms of overtraining. They're starting to have insomnia, hot flashes, perimenopausal symptoms, vaginal dryness, because what they're often doing is over-exercising relative to the resilience that they have in terms of nutrient-dense food, good quality sleep and recovery. You know, they're skipping that recovery because it's now not that they're kind of just over-exercising in general, but they're over everything. You know, they're staying up too much because they're super busy working parents. You know, they're working 24/7. They're on their devices way too much. They're not sleeping enough. There's no days off because, you know, on their day off, they're doing laundry and taking their kids to soccer practice and stuff like that. So it's sort of a combination of obsessive working mothers who are trying to work out and essentially they hit the wall because they just don't have the resilience. And so they'll start getting relatively early perimenopausal symptoms, which are a kind of a combination of perimenopause with quote unquote overtraining. And I would say a combination of overtraining and overworking.
I think I can relate to that, not just perimenopausal athletes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it's just something that as mums we deal with as well, isn't it? I think it's really important information.
Well, and I think what we can learn from that, based on the athletic data, you know, women are protected from things like cardiovascular disease because we have adequate estrogen. And if you're burning the candle at both ends, whether it's boot camp, you know, I mean, you see 40-year-old working crazed mothers going to boot camp. It's ridiculous. You know, they need resilience first. And, you know, then they're having a cocktail after that. It's like, you can't.
It's about finding the right balance though, isn't it? Because I mean, I went through a phase after having babies where I did very little exercise, and I probably did that for around, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, where it just wasn't appealing at all. It was very much about nurturing the family. And I guess in hindsight, looking back, that was probably how it was meant to be. And I didn't realize I was actually listening to my body. Mm-hmm. Who knew? But now, you know, now that they're a bit older and as my body's changing, I'm finding that I need to exercise differently. I need, sometimes I do need to have that quite full on exercise, and then sometimes I need to pair it right back. And I guess it also comes down to listening to your body and trying to work out what it needs and definitely not pushing against it. Like, there are days where I'm just like, no. My husband rang me before and he's like, so am I booking you in to train tonight? I'm like, no, that'd be no. He's like, he just ignores me. He keeps talking over the top of me. He's like, yeah, so what time would that be? I'm like, no, that would be no. I'm like, period. I am doing this at the moment. Like, seriously, dude, like, not going to happen. But, yeah, I think that comes back to what you were talking about as one of the first things that we discussed, and that is utilizing your cycle, your signs and your symptoms to allow you to work out what's best for you in that moment.
Right. And I think, you know, I agree. I mean, I think perimenopausal women should absolutely exercise. However, I think what we have to do in terms of noticing our cycles at this time and noticing what else is going on in our lives is to recognize that to be really healthy there and to be athletic and fit is that we've got to pay attention to the ebbs and flows of our cycle. Because, you know, we don't want to be pushing really hard on the first day of our cycle. We have to build in some rest and recovery. And there are times when we can just sort of plateau and go and have a workout, but it might be more brain stimulating. You know, maybe it's either
a cocktail.
We can talk about cocktails. Cocktails are not completely not allowed, but you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're having sugar and coffee and alcohol and you're trying to just use exercise to balance that, it's not going to work anymore. Whereas it might have kind of worked in your 20s because you had enough resilience. In your 40s, it often doesn't.
Everything worked in our 20s.
Everything.
We need to do things. Yeah. So, true. But I do think, like, we can learn from this that it's really about balance at all phases. And when we have the knowledge of regarding when to push and when to rest, you know, we can kind of just intuitively listen to our body. But on the other hand, you know, we're all kind of busy. So if we can schedule it in alignment with our cycles, and of course in perimenopause, your cycles start getting a little wonky. So it's a little less simple to schedule it than when you're 20 or 16 or 18 or whatever. But it's certainly, it's a way to start informing that and then know when you need the scaffolding and know when it's a great idea to push harder.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Jess, you're a woman after my own heart. I actually would just sit here and keep on talking to you.
Same here.
So before we wrap up, where can our listeners find you?
Our website is integrativewomenshealthinstitute.com. And that's where everything is.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been a pleasure chatting. For all of our listeners, please join us again next week for more Girl Talk on Menstrual. But in the meantime, of course, please, if you are screaming for more information, go back, check out the previous episodes of the podcast, and please rate us as well, because you're going to love to hear all of that information. But until then, I guess, guys, I'm going to say goodbye. See you, Nicole.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Thank you so much.